Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on gold when we come back. You know, when the federal income tax was launched back in 1913, the tax was levied only on the super wealthy, the richest one-half of 1% of the population, with a top tax rate of only 7%. Today, of course, the fears of those early opponents of the tax have been more than fully realized. By the end of Herbert Hoover's term, the top rate had jumped to 60%, and by the time Franklin Roosevelt was done, the top tax rate was over 90%, and the tax had been dramatically expanded to seize the incomes of the middle class for the first time. In 1913, the average family had to work until January 30th to earn enough to satisfy the tax man at all levels. This year, the average American family had to work all the way through May 12th in order to earn enough to pay their federal, state, and local tax bills. Now, when you compare this to the plight of medieval serfs, those medieval serfs only had to work for the lord of the manor a third of their output, and they were considered slaves. Now, what does that make us today? The income tax and Social Security tax violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant, including our English common law. And this income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal activities. The income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and Social Security is the eighth plank. And that's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask the question, do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? Now, for more information about tax and status, call us at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative. Best of all, remember, it's free of charge. Tax and status, the school is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about gold and the Chinese intent to increase their reserve holdings from 1% of their reserves, which are pretty massive foreign reserves that they are holding around, $600 billion, six-tenths of a trillion dollars, of which about 350 of that is in U.S. dollars. Now, the Chinese want to increase the amount of physical gold that they hold in their treasury, but they can't because there isn't enough gold out there for them to buy. And if they went into the marketplace and started buying gold, it would drive the price through the roof. They're not dumb. They're part of the game. They're part of the process. But the Chinese, the Indians, and the Arabians, the oil-selling, the oil-producing countries, have been in the process of buying gold since the early 1990s, and they've been buying it slowly on the QT. They're not interested in driving the price of gold up. What they're interested in doing is getting gold, something of value for the oil that they are selling to us, and they don't want just worthless paper. And they haven't been taking just worthless paper either. Now let me go back in time to about 1930 or 33 or so, and let's take a look at oil and gold and their relative values, a treatise written by my gold broker, Frank Batten, some months back in September of 05, and so it's pushing a year now. And here's what he said. He said, oil and gold have relative values. To evaluate the cost of anything in a time of falling currency values, one must establish a starting point somewhere in the past and do so as objectively as possible. Now, when a state of equilibrium exists, a time when all of the parties were happy with the price relationship is the point in time that we want to begin, and that's about 1933. And so this writer chooses the year of 1933 as a starting point for the following reasons. First of all, the dollar was gold-backed, and it was worth 100 cents. Second, gold was valued at $35 an ounce. Third, oil was valued at $1.50 a barrel. And a state of equilibrium existed, and everyone was content with the relative values. Some people like to use 1940 or 1950 as a starting point. I think these dates are flawed because the dollar was no longer worth 100 cents. Currency values had fallen dramatically from the 1933 level. So using the 1933 starting point criteria, 1 ounce of gold bought 23 barrels of crude oil and a higher quality of crude oil at that. So the crude oil gold equilibrium was 1 ounce to 23 barrels. Now today's fiat dollar is worth about 3 cents. It's not worth 100 cents, and it is losing value or purchasing power very rapidly every day. The inflationary effect is being muted by the low cost of imported products, chiefly from the Orient, mainly China. And today's 3 cent dollar equates to oil at approximately $50 per barrel. Today's oil price is approximately $65 a barrel as of September of 2005, and today's gold price is about $450 an ounce, which buys 7 barrels of oil. Note that 1 ounce of gold is equal to 7 barrels today, but in 1933, 1 ounce of gold was equal to 23 barrels of oil. So the salient point is this: oil is no longer bought with gold, but rather with paper pseudo money. So to equate today's oil prices to gold measured by a rubber yardstick, paper money, is a mistake. A return to a state of equilibrium, for example, oil, gold, money, a rigid yardstick must be and ultimately will be used, excluding pseudo-money. When we receive just 7 barrels of oil for $455, then the current price for an ounce of gold suggests something is amiss. And that something that is amiss is the fact that heaven and hell has been moved to separate gold from the price of oil. At today's artificial gold price, which is massively manipulated in the marketplace, it's manipulated by the Federal Reserve and by the Treasury, the price equilibrium of gold and oil is impossible. Only at a much higher gold price can the linkage be reestablished once again, as it most assuredly will be. Paper currencies around the world are dying worldwide. Gold is not dying anywhere. It's just manipulated, price-wise, in its value with paper. At $455 an ounce, the gold, there isn't enough gold in existence to pay for all of the oil we use. There are no oil-producing nations extant who would not gladly choose gold over paper in payment of their oil. At $455 an ounce, no gold holder will use gold to buy oil. There's not a single one anywhere in the world. So using the objective or subjective, whichever you prefer, equilibrium relationship of gold and oil of 23 barrels per ounce of gold, the current price of gold and oil would or should be $1,500 an ounce. To further make the point, if there were a nation willing to pay for oil exclusively with gold, they would be offered upwards of 30 barrels of oil per ounce of gold, and in my considered opinion, 50 barrels of oil per ounce of gold is not an impossibility. For the higher figures, that would be less than $75 a barrel in inflation-adjusted 1933 prices. Now, yes, I'm quite familiar with the oil supply peak oil thesis, much of which is true and much of which is untrue. But since 1933, the oil application usage has been massive and discovery of new deposits has been massive. It's equal or greater. And for this reality, I rely on the chief economist of the American Petroleum Institute, the API, the American Petroleum Institute, representing the massive oil industry in America. And based on his statements, based on his statistics, the peak oil thesis, mouthed by some who should know better, is a fraud. But then, how can you get more money for something that's in abundant supply? If you want to charge more for something, you have to make people believe that it's in short supply and that it's very rare. Now, gold today is largely a byproduct of other mining operations, and demand for gold has risen for the same reason that demand for oil has risen: giant increases in the world's population, and everybody wants a piece of the pie. I would speculate gold recovery, since the equilibrium year of 1933 has been a lesser percentage than that of oil. Gold is the ultimate means of payment and the ultimate money, and it always has been, and it always will be. The gold-oil linkage will always exist despite lapses into foolishness and insanity from time to time. Mud pies are not money. Paper is not money. Gold is money. Silver is money. And at today's gold prices, or at today's gold price in paper, gold is yet available for under one half of its equilibrium, $1,165 price. In 1933 equilibrium prices, gold can still be bought at about $13.65 an ounce. Now remember, in 1933, gold was worth $35 an ounce. And you could get 23 barrels of oil for 1 ounce of gold. Today, gold is $455 an ounce as of September of 2005, and it buys just 7 barrels of oil. Now do the arithmetic. The real value of the gold should be $1,165, but it's not. So it's then being priced at $13.65 an ounce compared to what it should be priced at, $35 an ounce. In other words, it's at less than half price. Still, it's less than half price. Now, the Federal Reserve and the Treasury stock is reported to be approximately 8,500 metric tons, the largest single national holding. Some credible persons suspect the United States does not own all of that gold. Total worldwide gold in existence is thought to be at about 120,000 tons, of which about 27,700 tons is major central bank holdings. So I've got to stop right here and make a correction. Yesterday I said it was 400,000 tons. Mark that off. I didn't have this number. I was looking for this piece of paper and I couldn't find it. I'll take that number that you wrote down yesterday, 400,000, it was way overstated. It's 120,000 tons. Now that's total worldwide gold in existence that we know about right here today, of which 27,700 tons is major central bank holdings with a value of approximately $400 billion, which is far less than the twin deficits for the United States for a single year. That is calculated at $450 an ounce. Now, the oil-producing nations sold oil until 1971 for gold by way of the convertibility, or the convertibility factor, and the final 20 years of oil for gold sales averaged about $4 a barrel at a time when the dollar had been losing value for 38 years, between 1933 and 1971. Central bank holdings are and will be sealed from public access always. And it's been reported nearly a decade ago that the Saudis were allowing $1,000 an ounce for oil paid for in gold, of which there were very few takers. So that tells us that 1 ounce of gold bought close to 100 barrels of oil at that time. Few takers tells us that the big players in the international geopolitical scheme of things would not trade 1 ounce of gold for 14 times the amount of oil that we buy today for the dollar equivalent price of gold at $455 an ounce. So the big players, the big mega gold holding consortiums, believe that 1 ounce of gold is worth more than 100 barrels of oil today. And these mega gold-holding consortiums and central banks who are in the know must think that gold then is very undervalued at $1,000 an ounce, because oil, then priced at approximately one-fifth of today's price. When the door slams shut on gold sales to the public by the mints of the world, cheap gold will be opportunity lost. Now, when I receive a letter here at the law school, you know, people ask, well, why are you so bullish on gold, or bullish on gold and silver, or just weights and balances? When the price of gold has dropped from $730 an ounce to, well, I mentioned this yesterday, I think it was $564. And that's because the gold market, like the stock market and all of the markets worldwide, are manipulated by governments. And in our country, it's called the Plunge Protection Team. And the price of gold, valued in dollars, they could drive down to 35 cents an ounce if they wanted to. Now, that might be a gross exaggeration, and, you know, since gold was at $35, I suppose people would want to buy it, you know, at $35 or $100. But my point is that to drive the price of gold from $730 down to $564 is no big trick for the people that control the printing press. Because in the Western world, we value gold as a commodity based upon paper currency. The correct methodology for valuing gold is, what will it buy? What will it trade for? What is its purchasing power? Now, when God designed the economic system for the world in the Bible, he priced gold at 17 ounces of silver, and he priced silver at 1/17 ounce of gold per ounce of silver. It's a bimetallic monetary system, the bimetal system. Now, we came along and decided that God had made a mistake and didn't know what he was doing, so we came along with the Federal Reserve System, the paper money system, the fiat money system, stocks and bonds, stock markets, profit and gain. We're going to cut a fat hog in the back. Well, okay, don't let me get in the way of the happiness and success of all of you people out there making profits and gains. But there's an inevitable conclusion to all of this, an inevitable end game. It's kind of like going to Flo's Whorehouse. You can get away with it the first time, second time, fifth time, 19th time, but at some point in time you're going to get AIDS, herpes, VD, crabs. And when that event transpires, then that's the day of reckoning. That's when we now have payday. We have to pay a price for our actions. When we buy houses on adjustable rate mortgages, it's a hell of a deal when you sign the contract. If interest rates go down or stay the same, it's a wonderful deal. If interest rates go up, it's not such a good deal. And if they go up very much, it can become a bankruptcy deal. And that's when you pay the piper. So we here at the law school are very conservative in our methodologies of dealing with money. Money is power. The ultimate money is gold. Gold is the currency of kings. Silver is the currency of gentlemen. Barter is the currency of peasants, and debt is the currency of slaves. You can decide for yourself what kind of currency you want to deal in and what kind of results you want to get from it. Now, in our report on gold, now that we see that there's a relationship in its purchasing power, in reality, the only use for money is for exchange. Gold should be used as money, and it should be used as exchange. Money should hold another neat little factor called a store of wealth. So traditionally, God, in his design, said we need a medium of exchange for the purposes of exchanging goods and services, and the medium should have a store of wealth, so it should be something that's pretty desirable, that everybody likes, everybody respects, everybody wants to use. And then he came up with gold and silver. And he told us so, and he said, no, that's what I want you to use. He gave us a law called Thou Shalt Not Steal and two statutes to support it that say, in effect, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. Now, those who deal in unjust weights and balances make lots of profits, no doubt about it. But at some point in time, there is a depression. And when these depressions occur, so you have a recession when your neighbor's out of work, and you have a depression when you're out of work. So these depressions, these boom and bust cycles that occur, like the 1930s and the bust of 1922, the bust of 1907, the bust of 1841, you know, these boom and bust cycles that we go through are the results of paper money. When we use gold and silver, we don't have booms and busts. We just have steady growth. In the period from 1865 to 1900, 35 years, America experienced the greatest growth in its history with 2% deflation. So if you put $100 in the bank in 1865, in 1900, it would buy $102 worth of goods. At the very same time that America built 186,000 miles of railroad and built steel mills and a great infrastructure and did all the great things, the greatest period of infrastructure building in our history. And then we decided in 1913 that we wanted paper money on a national scale because we'd had paper money from 1794 through 1836 and then a small respite. But we always had these private banks issuing paper money, and it's always been a drag on the economy. It has always produced booms and busts. We've always wanted it, we've always had it, and we've always suffered from it. And I suppose we always will. Now, some of us deal primarily in gold and silver coin. I do, and I recommend it to my students. I teach a business school, and in our business school, we show how to use hard money. Why God gave us hard money, and when you use hard money, we don't suffer from booms and busts. We're not in debt, and we don't lose our assets. Now, there are terms that we use when we use gold, such as futures contracts. So let's talk about how do the banks or the plunge protection team, the central banks, how do they depress the price of gold? Well, let me show you. It's very simple. Let's suppose that the price of gold works its way up to $732, and you want to drive the price down. Well, if you want to try drive the price down, and we have a free market system, you have to have some gold out there. There has to be some gold. You know, if you want to drive the price of hula hoops down, you have to increase the production of hula hoops until there's a surplus of hula hoops, or you have to get the buyers of hula hoops to a point where they believe that there's a surplus of hula hoops out there. So during the 1990s, I pointed this out the other day, to keep the price of gold in the $300 range, the central bank sold gold back and forth to one another and then made great pronouncements in the press so that you people out there, the general public, would believe that gold has no value and the central banks are selling it, and they're selling it for $300 an ounce, or $320 or $350 or $257, and it worked like a shot. All through the 1990s, it kept the price of gold in about the $300 range. So it works. We don't deny that. Meanwhile, other people in the world, not here in the Western world, not in America, Canada, and Western Europe, but other people, the Arabians, the Indians, and the Chinese, and others, they were busily buying up all the physical gold that they could get their hands on. Now, gold in the gold markets is not physical gold. The people who are driving the price of gold down from 732 to 564, they've got a lot of gold, but they're not using any of that gold to drive the price down. They use what they call paper gold. And that's because we here in the Western world really don't want physical gold. We want paper money. We want profit and gain. Now, if the Bank of England, let's just take the Bank of England for example, comes along and says, okay, here's what we will sell gold for. And they come to you and they say, we will sell you gold for $564 an ounce for delivery next June 2007. Would you pay me $732, which was the last high for gold, if you could buy it from the Bank of England for $564? See how easy that is to drive the price of gold down? Now, the price of gold has dropped from 732 to 564, and I haven't sold an ounce. I'm not selling gold. And the people who are holding gold, they don't sell the physical gold. They're not selling physical gold. And furthermore, when I go to buy this gold, I don't even have to put up $564 an ounce. I only have to put up 5%. It's what we call leverage, and we buy on margin. So I can go to the Bank of England and give them 5% of 564. So let's go with 564 times 0.05, and that's 28 bucks. So I give the Bank of England a $30 bill, and then they give me a contract for an ounce of gold. Now they have to buy these in $5,000 increments to buy a contract. But you can see that with a little bit of money, I can buy lots of contracts for future delivery. And I believe next year, the price of gold will be higher than $564. And that's the way the price of gold is manipulated. It's got to be manipulated by governments or by central banks who have the power to print the money to cover any losses. And because these banks don't suffer any losses, they just print more money. So let's just run this one by you. Let's suppose that we buy a contract for $5,000 at $564 an ounce for delivery next June of 2007. And we put up 5%, $282. If the price of gold stays at $564, I can sell the contract or I can take delivery on the gold at $564 if I so desire. But you know, people who are buying and selling this paper gold, they don't want physical possession. They want the price of gold to go up to $574, $84, or $94, and then they want to sell it. So they sell the contract. And over 80% of the gold trading done in the world today is done by this paper gold contract methodology. So if the Bank of England or the TOCOM or anybody, any central government came along and said, we'll sell you these gold contracts for $500, $450, $300, $350, $275, you know, most of the gold traders in the world, the people that are in the gold market, they're not dealing in physicals. And that's because there's a dual market here. Now, there's a physical market of which about 16 to 18% of us are involved, and we take physical possession, and that's what we recommend here at the law school. When you buy an ounce of gold, you take physical possession of it. Because that gold at $564 an ounce is undervalued. Let me show you what. In 1980, the price of gold was $800 an ounce and some change. The value of the dollar has decreased by 50%. You know what that means? Well, in 2000 relative dollars, it means that the price of gold needs to be $1,600, and in 2000, the price of gold was in the 300 range, way undervalued. Or the paper money was way overvalued. But the purchasing power, the actual physical purchasing power of the dollar lost 50% of its value between 1980 and 2000. And the price of oil, which was at, in 1980, probably around $10 a barrel, had moved up to around $20 a barrel. Today, it's trading at about $75 a barrel. As the dollar, the paper money, gets cheaper and cheaper, weaker and weaker, purchases less and less. Today, it only purchases 7 barrels of oil, that ounce of gold, remember? What does your money buy you? Let's try it another way. Let's suppose that you took $1,000 and you just put it in the bank, then you saved it there. You came back 20 years later and it buys half as much. That means that the price of bread is twice as high. Or put another way, you could have bought 800 loaves of bread in 1980, but you could only buy 400 loaves of bread in 2000. So you lost purchasing power. Now, most of you are saying, well, that's all right, my wages doubled. No, they didn't. While your money was losing 50% of its purchasing power, your wages only went up 25%. In fact, in purchasing power, you haven't had a raise since 1973 here in America. So let's see, 73, 83, 93, 103. So in 33 years, you have not had a raise. Furthermore, inflation today in 2006 is running at 10% per annum. You haven't noticed that because there's a lag time between the printing of the money and the lending of the money into circulation and the price increases that you see in goods and services. And that's been muted by this humongous debt that we have accumulated in our current accounts deficit with the Chinese in particular in buying all of these cheap goods, cheap tennis shoes and cheap televisions and cheap everything from the Chinese. It's worked like a shot, but boys and girls, there's an end coming to that. There's an end coming. Now, if this goes on forever, I mean, if we can buy $700 billion a year more goods than we sell, and all we have to do is print up some paper IOUs and give it to the people who are producing all of these hard goods and services for us. And if we can do that forever, we don't have a problem in the world. Bring it on, as old George would say. Bring them on. And my fear is, and history I think will bear me out, that if you If you take goods and services from somebody, and then you give them your check, they'll accept your check as long as your check clears the bank. But when your checks stop clearing the bank, they will stop selling, they will stop delivering, they will stop giving you those goods and services. And boys and girls, the United States of America is about to the point where our checks are no longer going to clear. And when the Chinese can't get paid, if they can't get Caterpillar tractors or Microsoft software for those tennis shoes and big screen TVs that they're shipping over here, I think they're going to stop shipping the tennis shoes and the big screen TVs. And that's just the inevitable way life is. Hang on. Let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. And if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. When the Chinese go to buy this 2,500 tons of gold, they're going to have to buy that gold in the ground for future delivery. And that gold is now sold into the future 15 years on all of these paper contracts, which is why we suggest to our students that when you buy gold or silver, that you take physical delivery. It's heavy, it's bulky, it takes some doing to take care of your own wealth. But if you have your gold in a warehouse and somebody else has physical control of it, you probably will not see 1 ounce of that gold. Today, if you were to cash in, you can get physical delivery, unless, of course, you're looking like the Chinese for delivery of 2,500 tons. That isn't going to happen. If you're a little guy like I am, you can get 50 ounces or 20 ounces. You could probably even get 100 or 200 ounces. There's lots of these little sales going on. But you know, when Saudi Arabia is selling $1 billion a week, they cannot get $1 billion a week worth of gold. It isn't there. Physically, it isn't there. So they take paper gold, and that paper gold is a promise by the Bank of England, Bank of America, Chase Manhattan, JP Morgan, the Treasury, the Federal Reserve, the Bank of England. Somebody promises that they will deliver to the Saudis that gold in 5 years or 10 years or 15 years or at some date in the future. And so then they buy, sell, and trade that gold as if they've already got it in their possession, and they're trading these pieces of paper gold. Now, everybody who's in the know knows that the paper money system worldwide is on the verge of collapse, and that it is history. It is going to collapse. What we don't know is when. So our Federal Reserve is working hard to maintain the equilibrium of the monetary system worldwide with the dollar as the reserve currency, to devalue it 30% to 50%, keep the price of gold from going through the roof, and the price of oil rather, from going through the ceiling also. So they're in a balancing act. And at some point in time, they're going to lose control, and all of the balls that they are juggling in the air are going to fall to the floor. Game's over. Then there's a period of adjustment, readjustment, the period when we put out new money. It'll be a new colored money, and there'll be a new paper money, and we'll have a new value for it, and things will have to readjust. And there'll be a lot of foreclosures, and a lot of you who own some property today are going to lose it. That's all. There's going to be foreclosure. When you can't make your payments, they take it away from you. That's why we advocate that you be free and clear. It's better for you to own a little house free and clear than a great big house with a mortgage on it. It's better for you if you own 5 acres free and clear than 5,000 acres with a mortgage on it. So if you've got equity, then you need to trade that equity that you have for something that you can afford. For instance, my daughter had a house that was worth $600,000, and she could have traded that house last year, sold it for $600,000, and then moved to Austin, Texas, or Jacksonville, Florida, and bought a comparable house for about $150,000. She didn't do that. Today, that same house is worth about $450,000, still a lot of money. But her chances of selling it today aren't as good as they were last year, because now there are more houses on the market, and they're on the market for a longer period of time, and buyers now are waiting for the bottom in houses. So they're going to wait a little longer and save their money until they can buy more house for the dollar. At some point in time, my daughter's house is going to go down in value to something less than the mortgage value against it, and if she can't make the payment, she'll probably lose it. I suggested to her that she sell the house, buy one free and clear, and own the thing. And she said, where can I, or I've always dreamed of owning a $600,000 or $500,000 house, and now I have it, and I don't want to give it up. So she's not living in her $500,000 house now. It's worth $450,000. And that's what paper money gives you. It's an illusion. Paper is an illusion. We love it. We accept it. We desire it. We prefer it over gold or silver and hard money. But there's an inevitable penalty to pay, and she's in the process of paying that penalty. Now, there's a term that we use is called buying long, and it's called the longs. And those longs are in the minority, because right now people, that is the big money, that is the central banks, those that are controlling the gold market, are selling gold short, selling it short. And then there's a term called naked shorts. And these are all investor terms. The average Joe Sixpack truck driver doesn't need to be concerned about those. He isn't concerned about them. He doesn't know much about them, and any degree doesn't care. But for those of us that are investors, and those of us that are trying to protect the wealth and the assets that we have from the impending economic collapse, we should be familiar with these terms. Long buyers are people who buy gold today at $564 an ounce with the expectation that the price of gold is going to go up. So we buy it and we hold it with that expectation. Since I'm a physical buyer, I buy long, and then I physically take possession of the gold and put it in a hole in the ground, and I keep it. If the price goes down, it doesn't hurt me, because I've still got physical possession and I already paid for that gold and I physically own it and possess it. If I buy a house for $150,000 and the value of the house goes down to $100,000 and I lose my job, it's a problem, but it's not disastrous, because I own the house free and clear. It's not worth as much as I paid for it, but I'm not going to lose it. But if I have a $450,000 house and I lose my job and the value of the house goes down to $300,000, I'm in a world of hurt, because now I can't pay for it and I can't sell it for as much as I owe against it. So I'm going to lose it. Then I'll be out on the street. Now, people who are selling short are saying that the price of gold is going to go down. And so when you see these big brokerage houses like Goldman Sachs, and you take a look at their short position, and you say, wow, look at their short contracts. They are shorting the market. What that says is, these are people that are in the know, and the market is going to go down, because they're going to force the market down, but they're going to sell short because they want to keep the price going up, but they want to keep it going up at a reasonable rate. And the price of gold in 2006 took off and was going up too fast, so they had to rein it in. Now, in a free market, they couldn't do that. But in a controlled market, they can control the price. Now, while they're controlling the price, of gold to hold it as low as possible, to stretch out the value and the economies of the world as long as possible, primarily until the elections in November of 2006 here in the United States. Then I think you'll see the controlled meltdown of the dollar by about 50%. The price of gold will go up. It'll go up in relationship or in value against paper currency, but that's not the way to measure it. It's not the way to measure the value of your gold. It's the purchasing power of your gold. And the purchasing power of gold, the people who are in the know believe that the purchasing power of gold is going to be worth more than 100 barrels of gold, and that's why they're not cutting loose from it. So if the smart money is hanging on to the gold, and if the smart money and the big investors like the Saudis and the Indians and the Chinese are buying gold and taking physical possession, then I think I want to do the same thing. And if, on the other hand, you want to take physical possession of $100 bills or houses that are leveraged out, that's fine. You know, just take your choice. But I think that the housing market has already peaked, and if you're holding real estate now that you should have sold and didn't, I think you're going to have that real estate for a long time. And I hope that you can make your payments. Now, when there's an economic meltdown, and these investors, not the smart money, but just the normal investors who are investing in gold or in commodities or in houses or whatever they're investing in, when they can't perform, we have what's called naked shorting. That is, they're actually buying and selling in those good services and commodities or those paper entities like stocks and bonds that they don't physically have. Now, when these shorts have to be paid off, if they can pay them off, then they have to sell their assets in order to get the money, in order to pay off those shorts or the naked shorts. And if they can't, then they're upside down and they go bankrupt. And that's what we're afraid is going to happen with big institutions like J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan has $48 trillion worth of derivatives sitting out there, and they're the casino, J.P. Morgan. If the value of those derivatives on either the long or the short side of the bet, if just 2% of them go against J.P. Morgan, all of their capitalization, that is, all of their market value, will be used up because their total market capitalization is only $750 billion. It's less than a trillion. And they've got $50 trillion worth of derivatives out there. Boys and girls, that's not very good. You know, just picture a situation in which you've got $50,000 worth of debt and you've got $750 worth of cash. And if just 2% of your debt comes due at any given time, it wipes out more than your $750. And you're bankrupt. And you're going to lose your business. You're going to lose your toys. Now, that's what J.P. Morgan is, but they're not the only ones. And we think that the derivative market, when it goes upside down, is going to take all of the world's economies, all of the world's fiat paper currencies with it. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody dies. You know, we've been through this before. We went through it in the 1930s with the Great Depression. We went through it in 1783 with the collapse of the continental currency. We've been through it, you know, in other countries around the world, like the Germans went through it in the 1920s and so on. You know, life goes on, but when life goes on with you having lost a lot of your assets. Now, the Gordons owned the Needle Rock Ranch in Northern California on the North Mendocino County coast, straight across from Garberville, California, 1,600 acres in 1930. And by 1935, we'd lost it all in the Depression. And so the Gordons lost their estate. The ranch is still there, and the Gordons are still here. But the Gordons and the ranch have been separated from one another. So having experienced that in the past, this Gordon looked at that and said, well, what did we do in the 1920s and 30s that led to the divorce of the Gordons from their land in the 1930s, and can we avoid that in the 21st century? And so we took a look, and we analyzed our mistakes in the past, and we said, we think that we'll stop doing what we were doing back in the 20s and 30s, and we think we'll do something different. And that's why today we're hawkish on gold and silver. Remember, gold is the currency of kings, silver is the currency of gentlemen, and barter is the currency of peasants, and debt is the currency of slaves. And if you're in debt, then you use the currency of slaves, and then it'll probably reduce you to about that status. Now, the Arabs, the Indians, and the Chinese, they have been secretly, over the last 10 or 15 years, pulling every ounce of gold. In fact, the Chinese are pretty crafty about this. Not being able to go out into the marketplace with all of their paper and buy tons of gold, they have encouraged their citizens in China to buy gold. And so the individual citizens in China are buying an ounce here and an ounce there. Well, you know, you take a billion people, and then if you can get, you know, 10% of them, 100 million, to buy an ounce of gold every month or once a year, it's 100 million ounces a year. It's many, many tons. So they're taking, along with the Indians, they're not dummies either. And then, of course, there's the Arabs over there with all their oil. And they're buying up all of the gold. They have most of it. If you want to know where that 120,000 tons of gold is, it's sitting in China, India, and Saudi Arabia. And about 10%, about 27,000 tons of gold. It's actually about a third of the gold in the world is in the hands of the central banks. Now, I said it was 10%, but it's actually about a third. The other two-thirds, where is that gold? Who holds two-thirds of the gold? It's not in America. It's not in Canada. It's in the oil-producing countries, India and China. And those people are going to take over the world in the 21st century. In fact, in Deuteronomy chapter 28, there's a prophecy where God said that the stranger that is within your gates, and all those Mexicans coming into our gates, will rise up high above you and bring you down very low. And then we've got this balance of payments problem, you know, with the Japanese and the Chinese. The stranger that we have brought in to our gates is in the process of bringing us down very low. In 1950, we Americans were the lender to the world. Today, we're the world's number one borrower. From being the world's number one creditor to the world's number one debtor in 50 years. Isn't that just special? All right, so there's the longs, the shorts, and the naked shorts. Now, I mentioned that there's two markets out here. There's the physicals market, and then there's the contract market, the paper gold market. By far and away, the biggest market is in the paper market, and that paper market is controlled by those that manufacture the money. And if they offer to sell you gold, now they can't deliver the physical gold that they've already sold 15 years into the future, but they're selling more of that paper gold every day. And as long as we accept that paper in lieu of the physical, in other words, if everybody who's holding gold claims went out today and said, okay, deliver my gold, I want it delivered to 2204 Jones Road and ship it by parcel post, and then it would take 15 years of gold production for the next 15 years at 2,500 tons a year to pay all of it off. Now, they've been rolling those gold notes over, and it's been working like a shot, because we here in the West aren't taking physical possession. Only about 16 to 18% of us take physical possession. And remember, they've got gold, and so anytime that people say, give me physicals, they've got some physical to give you. It's when too many people ask for too much physical gold all at the same time that the bank has a run on it. Now, we're about to experience a run on the bank. And when that run on the bank occurs, you will be left with all of the gold that you physically have in your possession. And if you don't physically have it in your possession, you're not going to get it. You're not going to get paid. And that's all the gold you're going to have. That's why we think that you should get physical possession of all the gold that you possibly can while you can, and especially at these bargain basement prices. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.